Okay, we're going to look at something from Luke 21. This is a message I really needed to preach to myself at one time. One of the schools I was working in, every month or so, the sixth formers would have a visiting speaker who would talk for about 20 minutes. It had to be entertaining, and it had to be less than 20 minutes. And all staff were invited, and all the sixth form would be there. And they invited me to do something. And I chose about five or six what I thought were thought-provoking or exciting physics experiments. But the thing that I remember mostly is I deliberately chose a very anti-God title for my talk. And I took a very strong atheistic stance. And I used the title, I won't tell you what it is. It was based on Galileo Galilei's fight with the Roman Catholic cardinals about 70 or 80 years, whatever it was, after the Reformation began, because the Roman Catholic cardinals were insisting that the earth was at the center and everything revolved around us. We're at the center and we're the big deal, if you like, and everything revolves around us. And of course, Galileo, through a telescope, had looked at the moons of Jupiter. And in the end, in frustration, had said to them, "Look." And they had said, "We will not look." And they refused to look. No matter how much he pleaded with them, they would not look. And I wonder, my title this morning from Luke 21 is Fact. I'm looking at what is a fact. One summer job I had in a blast furnace in the steelworks in Port Talbot, because it was so high, 150 foot high, nobody was allowed to carry tools around. You had to, the fitters had to carry the tools in a bag in case they carry in a spanner and drop one or whatever. And one day, there was a guy down on the floor and a spanner came falling from 100 foot or whatever, hit him on the arm, of course, smashed his arm and ripped it, but broke the bones. Of course, the bosses were called to find out whose spanner it was. Of course, nobody owned up. Nobody apparently knew what had happened. But the manager had enough sense to call everybody to bring their tool bags with them. And it was obvious then which one did not have this adjustable spanner in his bag, and he was sacked on the spot. It was a fact, even though nobody could say I was there and saw it. It was an undeniable fact. Now, this morning we're going to start with a bit of a history lesson, and we need the history lesson for what I'm going to say. And the history lesson is about the temple. The very first temple was a mobile tent, very elaborate. It was called the Tabernacle. And then the first fixed building, the temple, was built by Solomon probably about 900 years before Jesus was born. Then the Babylonians came, about 586 or thereabouts, and they smashed the temple completely, and anything they could set fire to, they did. And so for the, and of course they took the Judeans into exile, many of them, to Babylon. And then about 100 years later, I suppose, they began the odd attempt to rebuild the temple. But as they were rebuilding, there were, in the next 400 years, there were a number of attacks on the temple as well. But there were a number of serious attempts to rebel by the Jews and patch it up. One of them, by the Maccabeans, is still celebrated as a Jewish festival, Hanukkah, which was on the Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, actually, a few days ago. Then about 20 BC, Herod the Great, which was, we know a bit about him, don't we? He had gone to the Roman Senate years earlier and somehow been granted the status king of Judea by the Roman Senate. Anyway, about 20 BC, he managed to rebuild and renovate what they tried to rebuild after Solomon's temple had been demolished, if you remember. And so, because of his efforts there, it became known as Herod's Temple. And it was an impressive building, it was a beautiful building. And at the time of Jesus, even though it was Roman occupation, and they did collect taxes, as we just heard about the tax collector, didn't we? Nevertheless, the Jews were allowed to practice their religion. There were Sadducees and Pharisees, which were allowed. The Sanhedrin was allowed. They had freedom to celebrate their festivals and to live according to Jewish customs. But nevertheless, there was a Roman garrison there to keep the peace. And in fact, I read in Acts 24 this week where Paul is on trial before Governor Felix, and a lawyer says to Felix, you know, oh, this is great, Felix, we've had a long period of peace under you. So that was a big, big deal for peace. But about 66 AD, there was a powerful revolt by Jewish radicals. And this rumbled on for 3 or 4 years. The Romans needed reinforcements, so they sent to Rome, we need more soldiers. But Rome instead decided, we're going to deal with the Jews decisively and in devastating fashion. Vespasian was the Caesar. He sent a very reasonable man, highly respected, intelligent, reasonable man called Titus, who tried to liaise with the Jews via the Jewish historian Josephus. He tried to liaise with them. And in AD 70, early April AD 70, hundreds of thousands, non-exaggeration, hundreds of thousands of Jews were coming for the Passover, all entering the precincts of Jerusalem. Nevertheless, though Titus tried to negotiate, it failed. And so on the 14th of April AD 70, he blockaded the city. He let them all in, the pilgrims. He wouldn't let anybody out. The siege took almost 5 months. And according to Josephus, the historian, more than 1 million Jews died, either slaughtered or starved to death. 97,000 were taken as slaves, those healthy enough. And almost 1,000 young, fit men were taken off to be trained as gladiators to die in the Circus Maximus or the Colosseum. So truly, Rome's response was absolutely brutal. The temple was knocked down. Anything combustible was set on fire. Are you with me so far? That ends the history lesson. So in Luke 21, which we're talking about, this is probably 20-odd, 25, 26, I don't know, 27 AD, some disciples are commenting on how beautiful the temple stones are. Now, Solomon's temple stood for well over 300 years before it was demolished. This one is less than 50 years old. This is new. And Jesus shocks the disciples by saying, you know, these beautiful stones, this wonderful edifice is going to be destroyed. Now, they must have been stunned. What are you talking about? Nevertheless, they have respect for Jesus. Nevertheless, they ask, when? And in a long passage, we've read some of it, Jesus in verse 32 says, within this generation, within your lifetime, if you like. Verse 21 and the verses following, which we read, tell how awful it's going to be. Jesus insists, Jerusalem will be trampled on by the Gentiles until the time of the Gentiles is fulfilled. Now, I used to say the Bible was rubbish. That's what it was, a bit of a phrase I used to use. I'd never read any of it. Unfortunately, for me, nobody challenged me to on the details of what the Bible taught. But I heard a celebrated academic who was an atheist last week saying, this is what he said, pardon me. He said, if you go into any library or bookshop, you could pick any book off the shelf, and I guarantee it will be of as much value as the Bible. Well, really? That is a ludicrous statement. Only the Bible has an honest view of me, for a start, and you, and them. Why is the number of COVID cases rising? The government's blaming raves and people packing into pubs and whatever on a Friday night, which we saw again last Friday, the photos. The government is blaming these people. But why are the people disobeying the guidelines? Well, because they're as selfish as I am. They want to do their own thing. They don't like people cramping their style. But why is that? Only the Bible explains why I am as I am. Scientific research just a few years ago said that everybody tells lies. But that's okay. Lying is a condition of living. But why is lying a condition of living? Only the Bible tells us we sin. For all of sin, beautiful little baby that comes into the world is already a sinner. The world is wrong. It's gone wrong since Genesis chapter 3. And so why is the behavior of people with COVID around. Why is it so sloppy? Why are people so bad, so selfish? Because you can't eliminate sin with guidelines, no matter how able the people are who explain on TV slowly perhaps what the guidelines are and why we should follow them. See, we are moral beings. We know we're doing wrong. See, we're all moral beings. Even cannibals don't eat their friends. They don't. We're all moral beings. We all have a standard. But the problem is, we don't keep our own standards. That's the problem. So, I wonder what that aggressive academic atheist, honestly, that's the key word, honestly, I suppose, honestly would have made of this passage, because Jesus prophesies here. Jesus, when the birds are singing, when the sun is shining, where there's no conflict in Jerusalem, yeah, Jesus says, see these beautiful stones? In response to a question, or a statement, these stones are beautiful, Lord, and Jesus says, yeah, do you know what? They're going to be all smashed down. Now, there were hundreds of thousands of people prophesying all sorts of things down through the ages. But there are hundreds of prophecies in the Old Testament fulfilled. But this is from the lips of Jesus. And just like genuine prophecy, it's a fact. How could Jesus have known? How could he have known? I watched a drama. I've watched it a few times over the years, actually. It's about a politician who was involved in this particular tragedy. And he has a friend who's a journalist who's trying to help him. But eventually the journalist realizes, as he hears the politician say something, there's only one reason for you knowing that fact. You're involved. And how could Jesus have known that Jerusalem would be smashed to pieces in AD 70? Because he is who he said he was. He is the Son of God. And so it was. Jesus' words were accurately fulfilled. Here we are. It's 2020. How's Jerusalem doing in 2020? Still trampled on by the Gentiles. The only bit of the temple that remains is the Western or Wailing Wall. And every Passover, Jews have longed for next year. We'll celebrate the Passover in the temple in Jerusalem. Recently, I had to fill in one of those DBS things to prove my identity. Well, surely, isn't this proof of the identity of Jesus? How could he have known? This is an extraordinary prophecy. He's not guessing here, is he? See these walls, now they're all going to be smashed by the Gentiles. The Gentiles are going to trample on them, and it's going to remain like that until the time of the Gentiles is fulfilled. And it's still like that today. It's a fact. Jesus called it, in verse 22, a time of punishment. God was punishing. And he claimed, Jesus, that even though heaven and earth would pass away, his words would never pass away. In other words, what he's saying, you can trust me perfectly on this. It's a fact. Now, here's a fact. Are you trusting him on this fact? He is the Son of God. He is what you need. He is who you need. He's the Son of Man. He is the Christ. He's the only Savior. Are you trusting him for that fact? What are you doing with the clear evidence here? Ted Turner, who was the CEO of CNN, a big network in America years ago, was one time married to Jane Fonda, said, oh, I've been saved lots of times. I don't want anyone to die for me. I've had a few drinks and a few girls. If that means hell, so be it. Well, it's not a few drinks and a few girls that will send somebody to hell. What will send somebody to hell is saying, I don't care about the fact. I'm not interested. I don't care of the fact that Jesus came to earth, was born, and died on the cross for my sins. I'm not interested in the fact. If I reject the fact, that will undoubtedly, definitely, certainly take me to hell. He came here to save us. He can save you. Save me. Nobody more surprised than me. But I go back to the Roman Catholic cardinals now. We will not look. Are you saying that as Jesus says this morning to you? Look. Are you saying, I will not look. Is that your attitude? Amen. Mm.